Have you ever wondered how common and preferred stocks shape our financial landscape? Understanding these critical elements is essential for anyone interested in investing. In this chapter, we will explore their definitions, features, and practical implications. Join us as we delve into the intricacies of these financial instruments and their impact on investment strategies. In this lesson, you will learn to understand foundational concepts of stock ownership, including key distinctions between equity and debt. Next, you will analyze modernization and globalization in stock markets, highlighting the impact of dematerialization and IPOs. You'll differentiate and apply equity capital categories, using real-world corporate disclosures to deepen your understanding. Furthermore, you will examine the rights and benefits of equity holders, including their influence on shareholder value. Finally, you'll compare common stock, preferred stock, and debt instruments, assessing their benefits and drawbacks for both issuers and investors. Understanding stock ownership is vital for engaging with the financial world. When you buy stock, you acquire equity, meaning you're an owner rather than a lender. Ownership is formally recognized with proof, ranging from traditional stock certificates to modern electronic records. A key feature of common stock is its perpetual nature. It does not have a maturity date. Importantly, while market prices can fluctuate due to supply and demand, the par value remains unchanged. This foundation opens a door to exploring the legal frameworks of equity and the unique role of preferred stock. Understanding common stock involves delving into its structure, market value, and how ownership flows. The total common stock is defined by the company's share capital split into units based on face value, such as a capital of 1 crore resulting in 20 lakh shares at 5 rupees each. Market value, however, is influenced by supply, demand, and investor sentiment, and is not tied to that par value. In terms of ownership dynamics, transactions in the secondary market merely swap owners. The company's books change only during the issuance or buyback of shares. For instance, when 5 lakh Tata Steel shares are traded on the NSE, it results in no accounting change for the company. Legal definitions help us understand what shares really are. According to statutory meaning, a share represents a portion of a company's capital and includes stock unless specified otherwise. Unlike debt instruments, shares illustrate ownership rights, not creditor claims. They exist as countable units, from traditional paper certificates to modern digital records. Market dynamics influence their pricing, hinged on earnings and risk factors. Additionally, preferred stock functions as a hybrid, combining equity characteristics with features like fixed dividends, merging both worlds. To begin, let's explore the concept of preferred stock. This security is a hybrid form of equity, offering priority in dividends and liquidation, yet typically devoid of voting rights. Next, it's essential to distinguish between equity and debt. Equity represents ownership with a residual claim, while debt offers a creditor's claim with fixed obligations. A share itself acts as a defined unit of ownership, granting rights to both income and residual assets. Historically, ownership evidence has transformed from physical certificates to dematerialized records in today's financial systems. Finally, market forces play a crucial role in determining value, with prices influenced by earnings prospects, risk, and supply-demand dynamics. Let's now delve into the core features of preferred stock. First, preferred stock typically offers a fixed dividend, making it highly attractive to investors seeking reliable income. Its hybrid nature combines elements of equity ownership with the income certainty found in debt instruments. Additionally, preferred shareholders enjoy priority over common stockholders, ensuring they are paid first for dividends and during liquidation. A practical example can be seen with HDFC Limited, which issued preferred shares to secure long-term funding while maintaining control over the company. This strategic financing provides steady payouts without significantly diluting the existing common equity. Understanding the modernization of equity markets reveals a digital landscape for stock ownership. The rise of digital, regulated, and globally connected ownership shapes today's investor experience. Dematerialization through NSDL and CDSL eliminates the risks associated with paper certificates, simplifying transactions. Companies now raise funds via initial public offerings, like Zomato's notable listing in 2021, which showcased retail engagement. With high liquidity, the NSE and BSE facilitate efficient price discovery, ensuring transparent markets. Additionally, global investment channels like foreign direct investment, along with instruments such as American depository receipts and global depository receipts, broaden access for international investors. Building on our understanding of equity markets, let's navigate the categories of equity capital. We'll start with mapping essential components, the share capital structure, capital stages, and value notions in disclosures. Shares represent ownership and are tracked in units recorded electronically and in company registers. Next, we explore capital stages, distinguishing between authorized, issued, subscribed, and paid-up equity. Finally, we recognize the four value notions: par, issue price, book value, and market value, each offering a unique perspective on shares and aiding in interpreting financial disclosures. Understanding share capital is crucial, particularly in the context of L&T's shareholder distribution as of March 31, 2015. Here, we see that 91.51% of shareholders hold up to 500 shares, amounting to 65,886,346 shares, which is just 7.09% of total shareholding. In contrast, the category of shareholders holding 10,001 shares and above accounts for only 0.31% of shareholders, yet they possess a significant 81.90% of total shares, highlighting concentrated ownership. The total shareholder count stands at 853,824, with total shares of 929,562,061. This data illustrates a diverse range of shareholders, from small retail investors to large institutional holders. Overall, we observe the interplay between the number of shareholders and their respective ownership stakes. Let's delve into authorized share capital. This represents the legal limit on equity a company can issue from its incorporation, outlining the ceiling for share issuance. It's detailed in the company's charter, which specifies the classes of shares, their par values, and the total number of authorized shares. Companies often choose to set this limit higher to facilitate future fundraising, eliminating the need for ongoing regulatory amendments. For instance, an authorized capital of 1 crore rupees could equate to 20 lakh shares at 5 rupees each. A notable example is Larsen & Toubro Limited, which boasts an authorized share capital of 325 crores rupees. Understanding issued share capital is essential, as it represents the portion of authorized shares sold to raise funds or acquire assets. This is crucial for evaluating a company's financial strategy, including employee incentives. The balance in the share capital account is determined by dividing issued shares by the par value per share, maintaining transparency in financial reporting. Recognizing issued shares assists in reconciling legal capital to actual shares outstanding. For example, in March 2015, Larsen and Toubro disclosed issued capital of 185,910,000 INR, with a par value of 2 rupees, leading to around 92.95 crore shares issued. Now let's delve into the nuances of subscribed versus paid-up capital. First, authorized capital is the maximum share capital that a company can have according to its charter. Next, issued capital consists of shares that are created and offered to investors, usually aligning with subscribed capital when fully taken. Subscribed capital refers to the shares taken up by investors, typically matching issued capital if there are no buybacks. Paid-up capital represents the actual amount the company receives for those subscribed shares. For instance, Larsen & Toubro reported a paid-up capital of 185,910,000 INR in March 2015. Understanding these concepts is vital for grasping a company's financial health and structure. Let's explore the structure of equity value, starting with its context. Understanding where par value, issue price, book value, and market value are positioned is crucial for analyzing disclosures. Par value is the legal value disclosed in certificates and the memorandum, establishing a nominal base per share. The issue price, set at or above par, entails a premium, which is the difference between them. Rajesh Foundries collected 15 crores, with a significant portion as share premium, impacting its financial statements. Finally, book value represents the accounting value, while market value fluctuates based on market conditions and investor sentiment. Understanding the rights of equity holders is essential for navigating corporate finance. The rights landscape reveals what equity ownership grants and limits in terms of income and control. Equity holders have a claim to residual income, receiving dividends only after all obligations are met. Additionally, they exercise voting rights at annual general meetings to influence board decisions and policies. Companies may also implement defensive measures, like poison pills, to protect against hostile takeovers. Furthermore, preemptive rights allow shareholders to maintain their ownership proportion during rights issues, along with eligibility for bonus shares. Let's explore the rights of equity holders at ITC Limited during FY 2014-15. The net profit after tax available to equity holders was 3,711 crores. Out of this, 601 crores were paid as dividends. Additionally, the company covered dividend tax of 153.8 crores. Finally, 2,956.2 crores were transferred to reserves to support future growth. This illustrates how residual income is managed and allocated among equity holders. Equity holders play a crucial role in corporate governance through their voting rights. They participate in important decisions, such as board elections and significant annual general meeting resolutions. When shareholders elect directors, they decide who will manage and oversee the company. Furthermore, these resolutions influence the strategic direction and control of the firm. Votes can be cast either in person or via proxy, allowing greater participation across diverse ownership. In India, business families often wield control, despite owning less than 50%, due to fragmented holdings among other investors. Understanding the protective measures in corporate governance is essential. The first watch point involves closely monitoring accumulations when a stakeholder approaches a 15% stake, which prompts management to prepare a conversion plan. Once the holding surpasses a 20% threshold, it's crucial to trigger a conversion announcement to prevent control from slipping away. The poison pill mechanism allows the conversion of issued preferences and debentures into new equity shares. This action effectively dilutes the acquirer's stake, safeguarding the company's autonomy and shareholder interests. Understanding the rights of equity holders is vital, especially in the context of poison pills. First, the impact on capital can be significant. As the paid-up equity base increases, the denominator expands. This change affects the overall ownership structure. Next, the dilution effect occurs, where the acquirer's ownership percentage drops immediately. This immediate adjustment can deter further action from potential acquirers. Finally, the rationale behind shareholder rights focuses on deterring hostile takeovers and preserving the voting balance among existing shareholders. Understanding the implications of a rights issue is crucial for shareholders. Start with the initial portfolio value. Owning 10,000 shares at a price of 2,500 rupees results in a total value of 25 million rupees. If shareholders ignore their rights, these 10,000 shares will now only be valued at 22,500,000 rupees after the theoretical X rights pricing of 2,250 rupees. With a 1-for-10 subscription, this means shareholders can increase their holdings by 10%, adding 1,000 new shares. The cost to subscribe at the discounted price is 2,000 rupees per share, totaling 2 million rupees. After subscribing, the new total of 11,000 shares at the same post-issue price results in a market value of 24,750,000 rupees. Understanding bonus shares is essential in the realm of equity. A bonus issue refers to free additional shares provided to existing shareholders, financed from accumulated reserves. Companies implement this to signal confidence, optimize their capital structure, and enhance liquidity without needing to spend cash. Investors generally perceive this positively, as their ownership percentage remains unchanged, and the economic value remains neutral at the time of issuance. As we deepen our understanding of equity holders' rights, let's examine some critical elements. First, pay attention to the key dates. The record date determines eligibility, while the ex-bonus date is when the stock price adjusts. After the issue, the market price typically falls proportionately, keeping the overall wealth of shareholders relatively stable. Consider the example of Infosys, which issued a 1:1 bonus in 2014, effectively doubling the share count for its investors. It's important to differentiate between a bonus issue and a stock split. While a split reduces the face value of shares, a bonus issue increases the share count without changing the face value. This distinction is crucial for understanding how equity is managed within companies. Understanding common stock reveals its dual nature. It represents ownership with residual claims, voting rights, and a significant element of permanence. For issuers, this permanent capital allows for earnings retention and enhanced debt capacity, though it carries higher costs and risks. Investors benefit from the potential for unlimited returns and dividends, balanced against volatility and dilution risks. Governance plays a critical role, as shareholder voting can influence management and company policy. Finally, when evaluating financing options, it's essential to balance tax implications, control, and the overall cost of capital. Understanding common stock reveals its unparalleled advantages. First, it serves as a permanent source of capital, allowing companies to make long-term investments without the pressure of maturity. Additionally, firms can choose to retain earnings, using those funds to innovate or expand, instead of disbursing dividends. This enhanced capacity contributes to a stronger debt position, making it easier to secure financing. Moreover, dividends in certain jurisdictions can be tax-free, increasing their attractiveness. Lastly, companies face no fixed obligation regarding dividends, allowing them to preserve cash during downturns without incurring default risks. As we explore common stock, it's essential to address its drawbacks for issuers. First, the high cost of equity capital means that shareholders demand higher returns than lenders, increasing the overall financing cost. Next, dividends paid to shareholders are non-tax deductible, as they come from after-tax earnings. Moreover, the high issuance costs associated with IPOs and follow-on offerings, including underwriting and legal fees, can be significant. Additionally, shareholder influence becomes a factor when active investors may challenge or delay management's strategic plans. Finally, issuing new shares dilutes the ownership of existing shareholders, reducing their control and earnings per share. Understanding modern trends in common stock management is essential for navigating today's market. The equity management playbook has evolved, with firms leveraging various tools and markets to shape ownership, incentives, and liquidity. Stock buybacks have become a strategy to reduce the number of shares and boost earnings per share, while also signaling confidence to investors. Employee stock ownership plans, or ESOPs, align employees with long-term company success by granting them equity. Furthermore, global stock issuances, such as American Depositary Receipts and Global Depositary Receipts, help companies raise capital and expand their investor base internationally. Finally, digital trading platforms have democratized access to equity markets, enhancing retail participation and altering the landscape of stock trading. In understanding preferred stock, we first explore Section 85(1), which grants a preferential right to a fixed amount or fixed rate dividend, prioritizing these over equity dividends. Next, in terms of capital repayment, preference shareholders receive their paid-up capital back before equity holders during winding up. Moving to the distinction between dividends and interest, note that in Abha Metals Limited, 9% debenture interest is a contractual obligation, while preference dividends depend on the availability of profits. Additionally, preference shareholders typically do not have voting rights, except in specific cases, when their class rights are affected, or if dividends have been unpaid for 2 years. This framework underscores the balance between securing returns for preference shareholders while limiting their control. Moving forward, let's explore the classification framework of preferred stock. First, we utilize a two-axis model that classifies stocks based on their income mechanics and maturity horizon. On the income axis, dividend mechanics include accrual rules, their priority over common stock, and whether the rates are fixed or floating. Next, we consider priority and protections, which encompass preferences set by law regarding dividends and liquidation, including how arrears are handled. The maturity axis distinguishes between perpetual and redeemable stocks, with specific terms shaping the timing of exits. Finally, governance typically involves limited voting rights, but these can escalate during arrears or significant company actions. Let's delve into the income-based classification of preferred stock. First, classifying by income clarifies how dividends are set, their payment priority, and carryover rules, highlighting income stability. Next, cumulative dividends accumulate unpaid amounts for future payment, enhancing income security. In contrast, non-cumulative dividends do not carry over if missed, they rely solely on current profits and board decisions. Additionally, some preferred shares may enjoy participating rights, allowing them to share profits exceeding a fixed rate, aligning with broader policies. Finally, non-participating rights limit dividends to the fixed rate only, offering certainty but sacrificing potential upside. Understanding non-cumulative preference stock is crucial for investors. First, these stocks prioritize fixed rate dividends only when declared by the board, creating uncertainty if payments are skipped. Additionally, any unpaid dividends do not carry over to future years, resulting in potential loss for shareholders. Each year, the issuer has the discretion to skip dividends without legal obligation. This can signal financial strain, leading to credit repercussions, and firms often strive to avoid such scenarios by paying dividends annually. As we dive into cumulative preference stock, it's essential to recognize how unpaid dividends accumulate. These missed payments do not vanish, they carry forward, creating a significant obligation for the company. Furthermore, priority is granted to preference shareholders, ensuring they receive all accumulated dividends before any distributions to common stockholders begin. In fact, common stock dividends are completely blocked until these arrears are settled. Companies facing prolonged unpaid dividends often take proactive steps, such as recapitalization, to manage their financial health. However, this situation can negatively impact market perceptions and credit ratings, hindering future equity offerings and overall financial flexibility. Understanding preferred stock classification involves examining maturity. Maturity defines if shares are perpetual or have a set redemption period. Perpetual preferred stock lacks a fixed end date, allowing dividends to continue indefinitely. In contrast, redeemable preferred stock has a defined redemption schedule, presenting future obligations for issuers. This difference impacts cash flow management, as perpetuals do not have fixed maturity payouts. Moreover, investor preferences vary. Perpetuals appeal to those seeking long-term income, while redeemables cater to investors with defined exit timings. Irredeemable preference stock is unique, as it has no maturity date and exists indefinitely. This characteristic allows it to serve as a permanent source of finance, similar to common equity. Investors can expect repayment only when the entity is liquidated, emphasizing its long-term role. Throughout its existence, preference rights continue, ensuring priority for dividends and liquidation. This leads to its classification as irredeemable, highlighting its distinctive features in maturity-based categorization. As we transition to redeemable preference stocks, let's explore their distinctive features. The first is the embedded call right, which allows the issuer to forcibly redeem shares after a specified call date, as defined in their terms. Next, we have the call date and terms, where the redemption window and price are pre-established, along with the required notice period. Additionally, the redemption premium is noteworthy, as these stocks are usually redeemed at par value plus a call premium to incentivize investors. These elements come together to provide flexibility for issuers, while offering potential benefits to investors. Funding the redemption aspect is crucial, as it can come from distributable profits, or by obtaining proceeds from fresh issues, or other financing sources. Next, consider the impact on issue proceeds. Having an issuer favorable call typically lowers proceeds compared to non-callable equivalents. In the Indian context, redeemable preference shares serve strategic purposes. They provide non-dilutive capital, limiting shareholder voting rights. However, remember that dividends are not guaranteed and can only be paid from profits. This structure offers an appealing proposition for investors seeking flexibility and certain protections in their investments. Building on our previous discussion, let's explore convertible preference stock. This financial instrument allows holders to convert preferred shares into a fixed number of common shares after a specific date. The appeal lies in conversion economics, as it becomes advantageous when common shares exceed par value, while holders wait if the market price is lower. According to the RBI's circular from June 2007, only fully and mandatorily convertible preferences qualify as equity under the automatic route. Otherwise, they are counted as debt. For issuers, this structure offers financing flexibility with potentially lower immediate cash outlay, but it may lead to dilution later on. Investors benefit from priority dividends until conversion, with an equity upside thereafter, although treatment as debt can affect terms of inflow. Preference shares create an intriguing balance between debt and equity. They offer flexibility and enhanced net worth, but come with non-deductible dividends and possible shifts in voting rights. Importantly, there's no mandatory amortization, allowing for tailored dividend terms. While they can strengthen balance sheets and boost borrowing capacity, after-tax dividends can increase costs compared to tax-deductible debt. Lastly, control may be limited initially, yet could shift if dividends fall into arrears, impacting governance dynamics. Understanding the key benefits of preference stock is essential for any investor. Firstly, preference shares feature discretionary dividends, allowing boards to choose when to pay, rather than adhering to a fixed schedule. Furthermore, there's no sinking fund lock-in, providing greater flexibility regarding capital usage. This type of stock also enhances net worth and creditworthiness, strengthening the overall equity base. Additionally, there's minimal dilution of control, since these shares usually carry no voting rights. Finally, preference stock ensures assets remain unencumbered, preserving collateral for future financing opportunities. As we transition from the benefits of preference stock, let's explore its drawbacks for issuers. The after-tax cost of preferred dividends is significant, as these payments are not tax-deductible. Additionally, skipping dividends can lead to market penalties, negatively affecting creditworthiness. It's also important to note that common dividends cannot be declared until preferred dues are paid, which can limit financial flexibility. Lastly, omitted dividends might trigger preferred voting rights, diluting control for existing shareholders. Understanding these drawbacks is crucial for any issuer considering preference stock. Understanding the distinctions among common equity, preferred equity, and long-term debt is vital in determining financial strategies. Common equity provides voting rights and residual control, but it carries the highest risk. Conversely, preferred equity typically offers fixed dividends and limited control. Long-term debt holds the lowest risk, granting creditors the first claim on assets and contractual interest payments. Each option involves specific costs and tax implications that shape investment decisions. To bring our lesson to a close, let's recap what we've learned about common and preferred stocks. We explored the legal definitions, structures, and features of these shares. Then we reviewed the rights of equity holders and the classifications of stock based on income and maturity. Following that, we analyzed the benefits and drawbacks for both investors and corporations. Lastly, we discussed modern trends in stock management and compared stocks with debt instruments. These insights will enhance your understanding of corporate finance dynamics.